Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to a brand new series of the show. As we contemplate the endless ennui of a 2-month summer without any competitive football, I know, imagine trying to extract some joy from watching England play Test cricket. I think it's our sworn duty to drink as deeply as possible from the nectar that is what's left of the football season. And it starts right here, because the football's on. Yes, we're here for the next 6 weeks to take us through to the finale of another stonking season. We'll ask our guests whether we should take seriously the possibility of Liverpool winning the quadruple and whether they've considered moving to a remote island in the Pacific so they don't have to witness it. We'll talk Sean Dyche, Patrick Vieira and Harry Maguire kicking Paul Pogba in the side of the head. And we'll be wondering whether rivalries ain't what they used to be. Joining us this week to have a good old rummage about in the joy and pain of the beautiful game, it's the Nobel Prize winning author Charlie Baker and the man who invented the umbrella, Mark Steele. Prove me wrong. It's not easy coming up with these. Mark,
well, I was, robbed this week? The bastard who claimed that it was him. And he doesn't even acknowledge it on his Wikipedia page. It's pathetic.
So, it's outrageous. Yeah. So what have you noticed, Mark?
What I've noticed is that the team I support lost the FA Cup semi-final on Sunday. And I noticed that it's much more fun to support a team that loses than it is to support a team who wins, it turns out. Because at the end of the game, like, the Palace fans just all decided to just go absolutely... There's no way, if you'd not known, that you would have thought Palace had lost. All the fans were like cheering, waving their daft flags and everything. It was brilliant. And the Chelsea fans just all sort of got up and left miserable. And I thought, well, you know, there you are. Thank God we weren't ever bought by an oligarch.
Yeah. Well, for any number of reasons, I think that's a good thing. And
I know there are socio-economic and military historical reasons as well, but I'm not really interested in them. It was brilliant fun. And people are a bit disappointed, but I think if you're going to be disappointed, you should be disappointed by sort of losing quite comfortably. The worst thing to do is to have a little bit of horrible hope once that awful emotion rears its ugly head. That's always disaster for a football fan.
If it's true that you enjoy your football when you're watching a team that loses regularly, I think I'm going to be enjoying my football quite a bit in the next few weeks. Charlie,
yes.
This is not a criticism, but you must love your football.
I was going to say, it's nice watching a team that loses regularly, but there are levels to it. You know, there is a line. I've spent my life watching a team that just, you never ever expect them to win, even when they're top of the league or they've won every other week. So, yeah. I went to...
It's Torquay United.
It's Torquay United. That's who it is, if people didn't know. Yeah, Torquay United. We've actually been on it. We were on a 5-run winning run streak. I went to watch Woking v Torquay on Good Friday. It took the whole family. It wasn't such a good Friday for them. I don't know why they bothered using the pitch. It was all in the air. Absolutely everything just lumped up in the air the whole time. I mean, I couldn't believe it myself.
It's like air hockey.
It's unbelievable. I cannot believe. I thought we'd seen the end of that with playing out from the back and the Gegen press and all that. But no, still just, if you want to watch it in the sky, just get down the National League. And then
Torquay known for Gegen press, Charlie? Is that the sort of the, are they the Gegen press of Devon?
They've tried to play the Gegen press of Devon. They've tried to be, but they still can't quite resist knocking it in the air at any opportunity, you know, because it's all very well if you are Man City trying to play. Even we saw their keeper come unstuck doing it on Saturday, you know. So if you are sort of five levels below that, it is very difficult to do. And the other thing I noticed was I went to the semi-final, the Liverpool-Man City semi-final on Saturday, and there is flares in British football, as in pyros, not trousers. Yeah. Is that a new thing? Has that become more prevalent? Yeah. Because how are people getting them in? Because everyone's checked on their way in. And I said to my son, how are they getting them in? He said, oh, down their pants. Definitely down their pants, because that's the only place that isn't checked.
Bit dangerous, though, isn't it? Flare down the
what
pants.
What if it goes off? You know, what?
Yeah, well, quite.
You don't want that. But they had a special fireman to get rid of the flares and the pyros when they were chucked on the pitch when Liverpool inevitably scored. No. But I don't think I've seen it as much as I've seen it recently.
Well, as you said to me, Charlie, are they using rattles on boats when they get into some sort of distress?
There's some boats going down somewhere with a football. Come on, United!
Very possibly.
It should always have been you. Anyway. Maybe if they'd done that in the past. Keep up the Titanic! Can you hear the iceberg sing?
You're going down with the iceberg. Down with the iceberg.
Talking of the ball being in the air, Charlie, I saw one of my favourite moments ever in football. I was in Inverness, and it's a very, very windy place to watch football. And they were playing, I apologise to whoever's going to be upset with this, but it was either Dundee or Dundee United, one of the two.
They don't mind if you mix it up, don't worry about it.
And
the ball was in the air for a good 25 minutes, and then someone sliced it straight over the first aid box and everything.
Yeah.
And this copper got hold of the ball and passed it beautifully back onto the pitch, and everybody cheered. It was by far the greatest amount of skill that we'd seen, and it was lovely.
All right, so the Premier League title is going one of two ways, and the bottom three is almost done and dusted, but the race for the top four is proving about as unpredictable as a thing that is hard to predict. Manchester United, Tottenham, Arsenal and West Ham all seem mighty keen to pass up the tens of millions of pounds that is available to the team that finishes fourth, although West Ham have a viable alternative route in. Mark, to paraphrase one of the more famous clichés in football, it's a case of who wants it least.
Yeah, it does. They do want it, don't they? But, I don't know. Speaking as a supporter of a team that's very unlikely to ever be in that position... And if we were, that would be great fun to then go to Prague or something. But I don't know. It does seem a lot of... It's such a strange thing to be desperate to be fourth. And the justification for such enthusiasm for this is that then we'll be able to attract more investment, and because we'll get so much money for being in the Champions League and everything. I know a lot of football's about money, but it doesn't have to be so naked that you can just, you'd end up, if the share price goes up, then the share portfolio is put on an open top bus and given a parade around the area. I just, fourth, fifth, it doesn't, I don't know, but maybe, I know supporters of teams that are likely to become fourth would see that as bitterness, but I don't think it is. I don't know if Charlie would disagree in that he thinks that Torquay could be in the Champions League within 5 years.
No, I don't think. Not the Champions League. I'd love to see the open top bus going around Canary Wharf, though, Mark. I love the idea of that. Just the, all these lads in pinstripes, just.
We've got more sponsors. Yeah. We've got more sponsors. You haven't. All that.
Big in China. We're really big in China.
It is. We've got
up three
money,
places in the Hang Seng Index in the last 2 weeks.
I mean, you're right. Of course, it is about money. I think as well, Charlie, that Mark is right about this whole thing about attracting players. I mean, the teams we're talking about, It's Manchester United and three teams from London.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that difficult to attract players, I would have thought.
Well, what attracts players is money, isn't it? That's basically all that ever attracts any player ever is money. And if you're in the Champions League, you've got more money. I like being on this programme with you, Ian, and I've been in many incarnations. And in one incarnation, an early one, all you ever used to do every single week was moan about coming fourth under Arsene Wenger. Week after week, and we're fourth again. Why are we fourth? And now here you are, dreaming of fourth. Look at you, just all you want is, oh, please let us be fourth. It's embarrassing. You should be embarrassed. You're a disgrace.
Do you know what I would... Sorry, can I just come back to that and say I'd be happy with the Europa Conference League because I've never been to Tajikistan.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, it's all the teams, really like all the teams with numbers in their names, isn't it? You know, that's the one.
Yeah, with the blank faces on FIFA. Yeah. You know, when they don't even know who they are.
No, I think they should give fourth place. I've always thought they should give fourth place to the winner of the FA Cup. And if that is one of the top two, which it will be, not at the moment. If that is one of the normal top four, then you give it to someone in the semi-final. But I always think the winner of the FA Cup should be the fourth Champions League spot. Because at least they've won something, so they can claim to be a champion.
Yeah.
Or they could be really imaginative and give fourth place to the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely.
Or the Nobel Prize for Literature.
What a lovely idea. Or the Papa John's.
Yeah. I think I like the Eurovision Song Contest idea. I genuinely do. Israel, although they are countries, I should say, that is a problem. But, you know, I'm sure we can get...
No, the actual singer. Or the group.
Oh, right, lovely.
What, he has to get
not
a team.
Just the country.
He or she have to get a team together.
Yeah.
Who can forget when Brotherhood of Man beat Juventus in 1976?
Yeah. 150-1. And there was a lot of speculation about links to a Far East betting syndicate.
Yeah.
I mean, we have got rather off the subject here. I do remember before the international break, which seems like 100 years ago, I'd have said Arsenal were favourites. Then Spurs were doing well. And then Harry Kane took a trip to Augusta to watch the golf. Mm. And now it's Manchester United. Not a happy place at the moment, Mark.
No, they're really not happy. But are they ever happy? Are Manchester United ever happy? I mean, you know, even if they come top. I mean, I remember sort of walking away from Old Trafford once, the first year in the sort of current glory years of Palace, and I thought, oh, there's every chance that we'll only be up for one season. So I went up with my Palace supporting son, Elliot, and we went to watch Palace at Manchester United, and we lost 2-0 quite sort of routinely. And it was just struck me, even walking away, and I got talking to a couple of Manchester United fans, and they were just really not very happy. And then in classic fashion, I said, where have you got to get back to? And they said, Bristol. Mm. And I thought, this really wouldn't be a lot of fun, would it? You come up here and win 2-0 and you're miserable. And so I don't know if it's ever a happy place, is it?
Well, Pogba got booed by his own fans, yikes, didn't he? Charlie, have you ever booed any of your own players?
Never booed my own players. Our best player this season is a bloke called Armani Little, and he's brilliant, brilliant player. But for some reason, at the beginning of the season, a certain section of the Torquay fans hadn't taken to him, thought he was a bit of a show pony, I think. And they booed him. And then he scored the winner, like about 20 seconds later. And he just sort of went...
of course.
What am I supposed to do? You know, so he's being booed by his own fans, and he's a brilliant player. I mean, especially at our level, he's a brilliant, brilliant player, and really digs in and scored the majority of our goals this season. I find it such an odd idea to boo your own players. What is that going to achieve?
No.
You know, I can understand booing a manager if you want them out and you hate the way you play and the team are doing bad.
Yeah.
But I can understand that because they sort of signify all your hopes and dreams. But the players, that's who you need to do well. I don't understand it. I think with Man United, they get cross when you say, oh, a lot of them are from Guildford. But they're such a touristy club. There is of course, there's a large majority of them that are from Manchester and are proper fans. But they have so many fans that, of course, relatively, not like Crystal Palace, a large majority of people are going to be from South London, aren't they? That is, and they will all go. And so their fan base is brilliant because it's so tribal, you know, like Liverpool. A lot of Liverpool fans still live in Liverpool, you know, because, you know, they never want to leave because that's what they love. So it becomes tribal. So with Manchester, that it's worldwide, isn't it? So the amount of people that they attract to watch them is massive. So that's going to, I think that's what
as
on the fan base has.
When I was doing one of my town shows, we did one in Berwick, and there was I got talking to a Berwick Rangers fan.
Yeah.
And he said one day there was as the game was going on, the bloke next to him said to one particular player, he shouted to him, "You're crap, and your dad's chips are crap as well."
Really local knowledge.
You don't get that with Paul Pogba or Harry Maguire, do you?
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Pogba, say what you will about Pogba. I know he disappears as a midfielder despite his extraordinary global talent, but his dad does an absolutely oil-free chip.
Yeah.
Every time. Consistency is what's important.
Pass the ball. Pass the ball. And tell your dad his plastering's rubbish.
So, whisper it quietly, but Liverpool could win all four trophies. It's a horrible thought, isn't it, really? Like having to sit through another Prince Harry and Meghan Markle interview or Kurt Zouma becoming president of the Cats Protection League. Mark, do we want things to be shared around, or do we make an exception for a team like Liverpool? And also, maybe take Liverpool out of any tour schedules for the next 15 years.
Well, you can't help but like Liverpool, which is a little bit annoying, isn't it? You know, I don't know. There's plenty of reasons for saying as a club that of course people like Liverpool, and as Charlie was saying, that the fans are the bulk of the fans are from Liverpool, and so if anyone's going to win all of them, you know, up until Sunday, I was thinking that maybe that would be my absolute dream, is that they won all the other things and then lost to us from a miserable disputed penalty that should have been given handball, but the VAR cameras were switched off. And that's, you know, now that's out the way. I don't really mind. I'd sooner Liverpool won it than one or two other clubs that are probably not quite so endearing.
I would say that's true. Charlie, I feel the same way as Mark, really. The way they've done it on a sort of tiny budget compared to City and Chelsea and United and the rest, it's incredible what Klopp's done.
I think he's done such an amazing job. I mean, I know it's, in comparison, still a massive budget, but the way they seem to find players, and they're the right players. He makes very few mistakes. I'm looking at Minamino maybe as like one maybe mistake that he's made in the transfer market. But the way they find players, and there seems to be a conveyor belt of players they bring in to play that way, like Diaz seems like a sort of created in a lab somewhere to be in a Klopp team. You know, he's an incredible footballer. And he's hit the ground running. He fits into that front three, the way they play, or they all play in every single position. And you just watch them and you can't help but enjoy the football. It's enjoyable running, passing, exciting football, everything we love. There's that phrase, you know, they play in the right way, which I think gets overused. And some people say that about Manchester City. They play in the right way. They play out from the back. But I just find watching Manchester City so boring. It's just there's something about it. Maybe it's because they've not got a striker, because they've not got that outlet, you know. At the cup, the semi-final, they had sort of a team of six midfielders, you know, all exciting players, which you'd go, wow, I'd pay to see them. But for some reason, it makes it so flat to watch them. But with Liverpool, there's so much running and excitement in there.
I think
it's an expression of Klopp's sort of personality as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
There is something. There's a sort of cheeriness. I mean, we know it's an act. We know that behind it, you know, he's absolutely ruthless. Of course, he is. But it, it's not entirely an act. There's a sort of, and as he expresses quite often, know that there is something about community from things that he says about things that have nothing to do with football. Mm. You know that he's someone who really regards that as really, really important. He understands the importance of Liverpool history and all that sort of thing. And I think he probably, it probably is true that he's very, very careful to make sure that everybody feels part of the squad and so on. And even if somebody isn't playing for a few games, that he still values them, and I think, or, I don't know, the whole team seems to play with that sort of communal regard.
Agree. Yeah, really. I agree. It's, you sort of feel like he'd remember the tea lady's birthday.
Yeah.
I mean, very interesting in the summer with Liverpool. I'm assuming they'll get rid of Origi and Minamino. It'd be very interesting who they bring in, you know, and maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know. Who went from Arsenal, didn't he, Ian? And it wasn't seen as a massive loss from Arsenal, and he hasn't kicked on, has he? It's been he's won the league though, you know.
Yeah, thanks, Joey. Yeah, thanks
you
very
think
much.
He's I didn't want to win. I wanted to come fourth. That's what we were always told.
Not as good as fourth though, is it?
No. I mean, the other thing I wanted to talk about was this rivalry that Man City and Liverpool have, but it doesn't feel like a rivalry in the same way as Arsenal United when Wenger and Ferguson were managers. There's no needle, is there, Charlie?
No, there's no needle. There's no anger with it. I think it was Kevin De Bruyne says, oh, my kids go to the same school as Virgil van Dijk.
Exactly.
So I see him at the school gates now every now and again. So we just have a chat then. So I don't know. I suppose, what does needle come from? Wanting to win everything, but they've both won stuff. They're both teams are winning everything.
We need Simeone involved.
You need, I'd love that. Why no one's got had Simeone at a top club? I'd absolutely love that. Man United at Simeone at Man United. Oh, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
He could start an argument in an empty room, couldn't he, Mark? Simeone?
Yeah. I don't know. The thing with the rivalry, partly it is just a matter of time, isn't it? I mean, Federer and Nadal are good mates, but there was a rivalry because over a period of sort of 15 years and so on, they continued just being probably the two best players, two of the three best players ever. So that was a rivalry. If this went on for 10, 15 years, it could be that. I don't think they have to be sort of hating each other.
No.
So they shouldn't be both turning up at the school gates and punching each other because the teacher's been a favourite to the... How dare he pick your son's essay over mine?
That Van Dijk kid knows nothing.
But they're also both aligned in the fact that they both hate Man United, don't they? So both their biggest rivals is Man United. So there might be that feeling of, well, as long as it's not Man United and it's one of us, then it's fine.
I mean, Mark, you're a Palace fan. You've obviously got that thing with Brighton, although no one knows why. People in Hassocks and Crawley don't really give a monkeys, do they?
No. But given that football rivalry is utterly irrational, it might as well be completely irrational, mightn't it? I'd be going for, you know, the rivalry should be even more ridiculous and we should be really, really bitter rivals with Steaua Bucharest or with a... or with an ice hockey team, with the Vancouver ice hockey team. We hate them.
What about this idea of fielding a weakened team? I mean, Man City, I say a weakened team. They had a defender worth only 50 million quid and a reserve goalkeeper appeared entirely unaware of the danger of Sadio Mane. Charlie, playing reserves in big games, should the big clubs be forced to do it just for the fairness and providing us with a bit of entertainment?
Well, Pep has this thing, doesn't he, for big games. He seems to have a rick in him. That is the one bit of he seems to get wrong is his choice. And I can see what he was trying to do Saturday. But whenever I go for lunch or dinner with my wife, she'll always order something and I'll order something separately. And hers will arrive and it'll look unbelievable, like the best dinner you've ever seen in your life. And I will have always got it slightly wrong. And I always think that's what Pep's... Pep is like, oh, I've ordered the wrong thing again. Oh, no. And he must have been watching Saturday going, well, I thought we were going to pick the reserves. You know, where's Origi? Where's Minamino? Why is Salah and Mane playing? You know, and you've got chips with yours and I've got a bit of avocado.
It's very strange when City came to Selhurst Park a few weeks ago in a game that could possibly end up being... critical because Palace drew 0-0 And we're all thinking that you could see where I sit. I could see Raheem Sterling sort of wandering about. And you think, oh, at any minute he's going to come on. Please don't. And then when he didn't make any subs at all in that game. And you think, well, this is what, as an opposing fan, this is fantastic. Yeah. And now as a manager, you shouldn't be doing what the opposing team wants you to do. No. I'm sure it wasn't just the fans. I'm sure Vieira was thinking, wow, he's got Sterling here and he's not bringing him on. Or indeed anybody. And it's almost like a part of his personality, isn't it? I am going to be proved right. Whereas, you know, I know Klopp wouldn't do that. He'll go, oh, blimey, I've made a right pickle of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring him on.
Yeah, I think that's true. Okay, that is almost the end of part one. In part two, we'll be talking about Sean Dyche getting the sack, and we'll be asking our guests to come up with a three-line advert for the vacant Burnley manager's job. We'll see you in a short while. Part two of The Football's On. I'm Ian Stone, and I'm here with the electrical retailer's salesman of the year, Charlie Baker, and the TikTok influencer, Mark Steele. I had a lot of fun coming up with these. So, we asked the guests to come up with an advert for the Burnley job, other than, are you Big Sam and are you available? Mark, what have you got?
I think Sean Dyche should do it. I think he should do the advert. Do you want to get a team that's clearly not very good and make them into the Premier League side for many, many years and then just get told to go, if I can use that word? Well, none of them are thankful or grateful in any way that you've got their rotten, filthy, stupid fourth division side somehow to become 13th in the Premier League. Then come to bloody Burnley.
You know, that sold me. It was a bit Ray Winston, I felt.
Yeah. Ray Winston.
Charlie?
Yeah, sorry.
Do you think they got rid of Dyche? Right.
Charlie, what
do you think they got rid of Dyche because Neil Warnock suddenly become available?
We'll get to that.
I've written this. Do you want all the social and societal problems of Blackpool, but without the sweet mental and physical relief of the beach and sea? Then why not move to Burnley? Burnley, when you've run out of all other options.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. We'll just leave that hanging.
Just
there.
Leave that. Leave that be.
I would say,
you got to like him, though. People like Sean Dyche, don't they?
Well, we do. It did come as a bit of a shock when we heard the news about him being sacked. They don't seem like the sort of club that would do something so seemingly self-destructive. Mm. I mean, Mark, do you think they heard that Julian Nagelsmann at Bayern Munich might have tired of the delights of Munich and is thinking of swapping it for the satanic Mills?
That would be fantastic if someone like that, or if Pep suddenly announced he's retired, he's resigning from Manchester City and he's going to... He's going
to
go.
He wouldn't even have to move house, would he? He used to joke quite a lot about the fact that he was going to sign Messi, Sean Dyche.
Yes.
I mean, Charlie, they have the smallest budget in the Premier League. Their net spend from 2017 is 21 million quid. Yeah. It's £4 million a year, which is essentially 3 months' wages for Romelu Lukaku. I mean, I imagine Torquay's budget is about to be honest.
Nowhere near that. But what it is they can keep it low because all the players will play for Dyche. Because he signed them, he'll make them believe in what how he wants to play, and he's become Mr. Burnley, and the fans love him. There are murals of him everywhere. Yeah. So when you have a manager like that, who's a messiah, like players buy into it, and you don't need to buy big posh players because they wouldn't work in that system anyway. And so,
why have they done
it? It's absolutely insane. And the best person to get him out of the Championship is Sean Dyche.
Sean Dyche.
Unbelievable.
It's not necessarily down
there. Mark, do you know there are only three managers who wear ties now in the Premier League since Sean Dyche left? Can you guess who they are?
Apart from, I don't know, the Southampton guy, does he wear a tie?
No, tracksuit.
Tracksuit and sometimes a waistcoat, isn't he? He's got.
Yeah.
Right.
Sean Dyche's tie really has
Sean
Dyche's tie really has a sort of clip-on bouncer tie vibe to it.
All right, well, I'll tell you. It's Steven Gerrard, Brendan Rodgers and Roy Hodgson. Mm. I mean,
Roy,
you can understand
Roy. Yeah.
You can understand Roy. He gets up at 5 in the morning, puts on a suit and tie and then turns the heating up and falls asleep in the chair.
I think he's already, I think he goes to sleep in the tie.
all the other managers, Charlie, wear tracksuits except for Pep, who wears distressed Prada, yeah. I think it is.
Wears what he likes, doesn't he? He just sort of turns up in jeans and a jumper and that woolen coat he's got, which I always worry about in the rain, because it looks like it's going to get very heavy, you know, when it's red.
Like a sheep.
Like he'll be warm, but it'll just be too, it'll be too much. It'll be too heavy. He won't be able to make good decisions. Maybe that's what he wears when he's making his team selection, you know, but...
Oh, my coat's too heavy. I can't think straight.
Yeah, the tie, it's a very old school, like a school thing, isn't it? You know, the tie and jumper look, which is the Gerrard look. You know,
as someone who's seen Roy Hodgson for quite many times, sort of quite close up during a game, he did manage to affect this while he was wearing his jacket and tie, this sort of look of some bloke who's been to meet his mates at Wetherspoons as he goes once a week, and now it's pouring with rain, and two buses have been cancelled, and four have gone the other way.
He has got a hangdog. Yes. Meanwhile, 250 miles further south, Graham Potter has steered Brighton to a possible top 10 finish on the back of away wins over Arsenal and Tottenham. Never mind North London being red or white, it's currently blue and white striped. Mark, you must be loving what's happening at Brighton.
It's just, we did sort of say this, but you know that I think Palace completely walloped Arsenal that night, which utterly astonished me. And now I think we've sort of done you in a bit, really. I think you've all fallen to bits, and now Brighton have just come up and sort of swept up after us. It doesn't seem fair. I think they should give us those 3 points if there was any justice at all.
I mean, they're the only team, Charlie, to beat Arsenal and then Spurs in a week, aside from Hull City, which was a few years ago. But Graham Potter, is he one of those coaches that will get a bigger job and then it'll all go wrong?
Well, he's sort of the king of the, what I call the PE teacher managers. There's a lot of them in the National League, sort of these PE teacher guys who have read a book on sports science. And they speak about the third phase penetration, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And you go, they seem to get found out by football people quite a lot of the time. But Graham Potter is the king of those guys. They all seem to have, the rest of them seem to sort of have trained under him. I felt like they were underachieving, and these last two wins, I think they went 5 or 6 games without scoring recently.
They don't like scoring a lot of goals.
So I'm surprised.
They don't score at home.
They don't score a lot of goals. So they get 1-0 up and then seem to be able to just sort of manage the game and hold on to the game. And it's fascinating. I think this season may have done him, the second half of the season may have done him not many favours, actually, because I think it was quite exciting at the start. But then like someone like Brentford come through and they're playing exciting football and they're scoring goals and they're beating teams as well. And so there's a lot of these managers around. It'd be interesting to see how he kicks on or who they sign in the summer. They need a striker. They haven't got, you know, a decent striker.
No, they've only got Mopay. Yeah. I mean, I was reading about him. He started at Östersund in Sweden. Do you know this is a place, Mark, was known as the Winter City? I mean, how cold.
Yeah, I went to Östersund once.
You've been?
Yeah, I went on a train once when I was 26.
Oh.
I can't say that while I was there, I thought, this one day is going to be the birthplace of the main striker for our rival club. I can't say that that's, as I sort of went past all the snow, that that's what I was thinking.
No. No, but he had some interesting ideas. The players, I mean, he really got the local community involved. The players had to sing, dance and act in front of an audience to improve their performance. Now, we know that doesn't always improve your performance, don't we? But I like their style of football, though. And I like the town. So, good luck to him.
I love the town. I mean, it's a very, very magical sort of way that Palace... I mean, almost all Palace fans... I remember talking to a Palace fan outside the ground and this bloke was talking to my son who was saying how much he couldn't, I'm not going, my dad was going to Brighton, I'm not going to Brighton, that's the end. And this bloke went, no, listen, you've got it wrong, son, no, love the town, hate the club, that's what you've got to think. Like he'd done that in a sports supporting essay that was a sort of, that was like the sort of the supplementary course that you do after the PE one. Graham, but when they all get into, do they want all the players get there? What are we doing? What are we training on today, Graham? We're going to sit and do an essay on the five different meanings of agility and mobility. Do we have to?
Like I say, I've got a lot of time for them. And they did play well against us and Spurs. All right, let's have a quick game of Who Am I before we go to the break. I was born in May 1966. I played for 8 clubs in 2 countries, including England and my home country. In England, I won the league 5 times, 1 for the first team I joined, and then 4 more times for my final club, and I won 2 FA Cups. And I played 45 times and scored 20 goals for my country. I won no major honours. However, I was the player manager of the team that won the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in 2005. Who am I? We'll let you know after these messages. Part 3 of the Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, the world squash champion Charlie Baker, and 45th in line to the throne, Mark Steele.
Might be 44th by the time this goes out.
All right, who am I? Okay, here's the clues. Before the break, I gave you these. I was born in May 1966. I played for 8 clubs in 2 countries, including England and my home country. In England, I won the league 5 times, 1 for the first team I played for, and then 4 more times my final club, and I won 2 FA Cups. And I played 45 times and scored 20 goals for my country, but won no major honours. However, I was the player manager of the team that won the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in 2005. Who am I? Mark?
Oh, God, I don't know. Charlie's going to get this, and you've got that sort of brain. I don't know. So it'd be someone who was sort of playing in the early 90s.
Yes.
Robson, someone like that. No, he won major honours, didn't he? He won more than 2 FA Cups. 2 FA Cups. Who would have won the FA Cup in the late 19... Oh, no. The trouble is, now, what I would like to do, and I know this wouldn't be good television, would be to spend about an hour and a half pondering all the different permutations. And then I would get it. I know that doesn't count.
Shall we take another break?
Take a break.
I think Mark Steele ponders footballers is a great program. You should pitch it.
There should be a channel for it that breaks GB News' record for the least number of viewers. Yeah.
Charlie, you know who this is.
I don't know who it is. I'm going to have a guess. Is it Eric Cantona?
Eric Cantona. Yes. We couldn't obviously give the most obvious Crystal Palace clue, Mark, because you might have got that, of course.
Yes. But,
he won with Leeds, didn't he? And then obviously with Man United, he scored that goal for Liverpool in the FA Cup final.
That was the day that Liverpool wore the cream suits.
Oh, that's the cream suits day, was it? Yeah, yeah.
That's right. And Cantona punished them properly for those suits. Although they were well fitted, I felt. sorry, my granddad was the tailor. Anyway.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Of course he was. Torquay United are currently mid-table in the National League. Ninth, I believe. And Playmore. Yes, and Playmore is a tough place to go, although as the weather improves, a lovely destination for an away game. Charlie, I know what people say, the National League is a hard league to get out of. Is it just what people say, like the Championship, or is it just that the teams aren't?
No, there's not enough places to get out of it. I mean, BT Sport do brilliant coverage of the National League, and they really do get behind it. And there are so many big teams in the National League now, like big English, old English league teams and Welsh, a Welsh team in the English League.
Stockport, Wrexham, Halifax, Chesterfield, Notts County,
yes. You know. You got Torquay, Southend are down there now. Lots and lots of teams who you'd recognise the names of as thinking they're in League One still.
Does it seem like a different league now, John?
Yes. It does. The top 10, top 11, the standard is very, very good. And the thing is, it's everybody can beat everybody because everybody's got all the players, no matter how good they are, have a mistake in them. And so that's why they're in the National League. You see some players and you go, why is he down here? And then they do something and you go, oh, that's why he's down here. So they've all got a mistake in them. But it's what makes it so exciting because they're good. They're really fit. It's full time. They're really good players. They've got a very high skill.
They're all full time, aren't they?
Yeah, nearly all full time. Yeah, I think there's a couple of part time teams. But the players are really good. I think it's actually a better standard than League Two because at the moment, and this will change, there's no salary cap. And so you'll get a lot of League One and League Two players playing in the National League instead of League One or League Two because there's no salary cap. So people like Stockport have got money and Wrexham have got money, Notts County have got money, Chesterfield have got money. They will throw money. So, you know, Paul Mullin, who was Cambridge United's top scorer last season, left Cambridge United when they went to League One and dropped down to play for Wrexham. Same with Ben Tozer, who was Cheltenham's captain. Ollie Palmer, who's Wimbledon's top scorer. They've all dropped down to the National League. All, you know, the conference we're talking about, but mainly because of wages, but this is all Wrexham. So Wrexham have Hollywood owners, Ryan Reynolds. And
they got Hollywood.
That's a project going on there, you know. And it looks, and it's exciting. Yeah. So Wrexham on Saturday had 10,000 fans in the National
League. I watched a bit of the game against Solihull Moors.
In the National League, in Division 5. You know,
that's great.
That would happen in no other country. In Division 5, you'd have 10,000 fans. So the standards there, the levels there, it's so hard because you have one automatic and then there are seven playoff places. And so it's so hard to get out of.
Mark, do you watch it at all? Do you? I mean, it is.
Yeah,
and I would show it on BT Sport.
And I would if I had the time. I'd love it. When I was in Brighton more often than I am now, I used to go to Whitehall every now and again.
Oh yeah.
I had a neighbour who was the official fans liaison officer for Whitehall, and he used to play the bugle there, and and that wasn't noisy.
Did he practice at home?
Yes, he did. And not only that, he was a really full fright sort of chap. And once he knocked on my door. I was sort of living in Brighton for a while, so he knocked on my door, and I didn't know it was him. And then I heard this extraordinary noise. And I opened the door. It was unbelievable noise. And I opened the door and he had a World War II air raid siren thing that you wind up like that, like you'd seen Dad's Army. That you'd think everyone within 2 miles must be dying. We got an Anderson shelter still at the end of the garden. Unbelievable noise. And then when it wound down and I could hear him, he went, I saw this on eBay. I went and bought it for 45 quid off a bloke in Margate. I'm going to take it down to Whitehall.
Yeah.
And then I went down with him and...
Yeah, wasn't that every corner?
Yeah, exactly.
No, free kick outside the box.
Yeah. It was brilliant. And I was sort of stood by the wall, because you're still right by the wall here and the game's there, talking to a bloke once. And I said, God, it's a good game. I said, that one particular midfielder, he looks really good, him. And he went, oh, yeah, I'm glad you think so. That's my son.
Ah, oh, nice.
Oh, what a brilliant thing.
Well,
did you say he makes terrible chips?
Exactly. Mark, it was
that,
great.
That could have gone horribly wrong.
Could have done, but you don't
Bugle
tend to get that at the
choose.
Emirates.
Bugle is a strange instrument to choose, isn't it? Don't you think? I mean, if you're going to pick up a musical instrument, what...
We used to have a guy with a bell. We used to have a guy called John Bartlett who had a bell, and who would ring his. Come on, United! Ding, 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 ding.
So what happens at the Emirates, Ian? I would imagine like a jazz xylophone.
yes. Yeah, someone with a sousaphone plays something quite mournful.
You know, some Arsenal fans only have one cello.
It's tough the last few years. Those season tickets
your knees,
don't pay for themselves.
When you're playing in the seats, they're not quite.
Yeah.
They need to sort that out.
Yeah, yeah. Club level, you can get a tuber up there. It's great. Anyway, we are enjoying the conference at the moment. At the other end of the football pyramid. On Sunday, I was lucky enough to go to the FA Cup semi-final between Chelsea and Marks. Beloved Crystal Palace. The Palace fans, as Mark said at the start, were definitely more excited before, during, and to be honest, even after the game. Mark, is it at all patronising of me to ask if you enjoyed your big day?
Yeah, it did. It was great. And I think you go into it, you know, unless you're really, really quite deluded, you go into it thinking the chances of winning are probably about 1 in 4 or something like that. So, you know, you're already, there's already a, you're, what's the word? You're cocooned a little bit from things going terribly wrong. And it was, yeah, it was a it was fantastic. And I think that the fans, everybody had a brilliant time.
Made so much noise.
Should, and this isn't my comment. Somebody else made this comment. I saw on social media, but I absolutely endorse it. I think we should really, really pay tribute to the Chelsea fans, because not all of the Manchester City fans the previous day adhered to the silence.
No.
In the Liverpool game, but Chelsea did. They adhered to the silence, not just for 1 minute, but throughout the entire game and afterwards. And I think we should pay tribute to them for being very respectful.
So respectful.
And Crystal Palace fans are brilliant. They are absolutely brilliant, aren't they? Crystal Palace fans are fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. And just, I'm interested, Mark, in from your point of view, how do you feel about it being at Wembley? Because from a neutral's point of view, we all go, oh, we're doing it at Wembley. It's, you know, we're doing semis at Wembley. I mean, would you have preferred to have been at Villa Park or Old Trafford or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit conflicted. Well, one of the things that makes it easier is that it's bigger. So Villa Park's, what would that be? I don't know what it is, 40-something?
50,000. Only 40,000.
Yeah,
you'd only get about 18,000,
so obviously 20,000
each.
There, I think there was 36,000 Palace fans. Yeah. So obviously if it was Villa Park, half of them, but maybe half of them wouldn't have been able to go. So for that reason, it's best that it's at Wembley.
And but they looked like they were having a brilliant time.
It was a fantastic time, and a really, really brilliant time. And afterwards, I don't think many of us were that down. I think we could have played better and so on and all them sort of things. But it was brilliant. It was really, really.
And what
clearly
about?
We enjoyed it. This is a strange thing about supporting a football team. You know, I reckon Charlie gets probably more joy out of following Torquay than a great many fans who follow a team that ends up second or third in the Premier League, because it's all about expectations and stuff. So if you exceed your expectations, you're happier than someone who doesn't.
Definitely. You don't get to choose.
I think there's something in there. What about Patrick Vieira, Mark? You must absolutely love what he's doing. He's got a young, dynamic team. There hasn't been any talk about relegation. That's testament to the work he's doing.
No, it's fantastic.
They're fun to watch.
Yeah, brilliant fun to watch. And there was a match early this season where we lost. We were 3-0 down at half time to West Ham, and there was still a really good atmosphere because we sort of give it a go. And then we very nearly drew. It was 3-2, and then we almost had a chance right at the end. And people went away buzzing.
Yeah.
There's just a great excitement to it. Obviously, you don't want to be relegated. That is a big stress. So if you can play like that and end up 12th, probably we'll end up much the same as we would have done under Roy Hodgson. And Roy Hodgson, you can go anywhere in this area and he'll always get a cup of tea, you know, but he's very loved. But Vieira is exciting. There's something exciting about it. And players like, and of course, Zaha, who is without doubt the greatest player I've ever seen at Palace. But now it's not so easy to control Palace as you would have been able to. I think for many years, Premier League managers thought, right, we're playing Palace. If we stop Wilf, we're probably going to be all right. Now it's not like that because there's Gallagher, while he's here, but also Elise and Eze, who didn't have his best game on Sunday, but and Mateta also. And also even the defenders knowing how to attack and coming out of defence and so on. So it's exciting. We might end up in the same place, but there you are. It's all the thrills in the chase.
I thought that was so lame not letting Conor Gallagher play on Sunday.
I thought so as
real,
well.
For want of a better phrase, small D energy. You know, real sort of like, no, he can't play. It's like really like, come on.
Yeah, my Chelsea mate said to me, he knew the rules.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It was so lame.
Yeah. What can you
say? He knew the rules. Yes, I wonder if we could say that about a certain owner of a club.
Yeah, I know.
He knew the rules. He knew that if you end up funding a dictator that invades another country, he knew the rules.
I'll pass that on to him next time I see him. Now it's time for our quiz and a bit of a change in format for Call Yourself a Fan, as we're asking questions based on this week's action and introducing a brand new element designed specifically to really upset at least one and hopefully both of our guests. So Mark, you'll be going first. And after the general knowledge bit, you'll have to choose two final questions from one of the topics that we've come up with. And that will mean Charlie gets the topic you don't want later in the show.
I didn't understand a single word of that. But carry on.
I was going to read it again, but I don't think...
A lot of clarity there.
Let's just see what happens, all right? Mark, these are your questions. There are a lot of Cup semi-finals this weekend with the men's and women's FA Cup finals, semi-finals in England. But it was also Scottish Cup semi-final day. Hibs lost to Hearts in the Edinburgh Derby. Which former English FA Cup winner manages Hibs? It's a tough question, this.
Former FA Cup winner?
Which former English FA Cup winner manages Hibs?
Really good friend who was at the game. I know they lost 2-1. I know they had a man sent off. But the manager eludes me. A former FA Cup winner.
Yes.
Right, so it would have been... Oh, I don't know. Would it? A former FA Cup winner. think of an FA Cup. Stanley Matthews.
Yes, it was Stanley Matthews. I can't believe you got it. It wasn't. It was Sean Maloney. Sean Maloney is now the manager of Hibs. Won the FA Cup with Wigan, I believe, although I haven't got it written down in front of me. All right, question two. Burnley made their first change in management since October 2012 as they sacked Sean Dyche. Who was their previous permanent manager, not a caretaker?
From that time, it would be someone like Owen Coyle, possibly.
Good effort, but no, it's Eddie Howe. Was Eddie Howe, who's now moved on to a slightly bigger budget, I think. Question three, West Ham booked their place in the semi-finals of the Europa League on Thursday. Wonderful evening, beat Lyon. They've won two European trophies before, the European Cup Winners' Cup in 1964-65, and their other win came in 1999, but which trophy did they win? It's a European trophy.
I don't know what it would be. The Skoda sunroof.
Essentially, Scandinavian
and East London combined league.
Yeah, near enough. It's the Intertoto Cup.
Right. If I'd taken that seriously, I might have done all right.
Okay, now Mark, you have a choice.
No, please don't make it naught out of even more. Right.
Well, let's see how it goes. You have a choice of two question options. You can either have European football, which, you're a Palace fan, might not be your specialist subject, or semi-final losers we've got here.
go on, semi-final losers.
It's what you've chosen. I was going to give it to you, whatever. But, here we are. Have a go at this one. Which team has lost the most FA Cup semi-finals?
It'd be a good team, obviously, to get there.
It is a good team. It is, although not so much this season.
I think it could be your mob.
It's not. No, it's Everton. Oh. 13 out of 26. Mm. 13 out of 26, they have lost FA Cup semi-finals. All right, let's try this one. There are three teams who are tied for the dubious record of being in the most FA Cup semi-finals without making a final. One is no longer in existence. Can you name one of the other two?
Semi-finals without ever getting to a final.
Yes. I can give you a clue here. One lost to Manchester United in a rather big semi-final. The other one, I really don't remember them being in the FA Cup semi-finals at all, but apparently they were.
Who lost to Manchester United? Were Oldham, but I can't imagine it was them.
It is them. Oh, I'm going to let you have that.
Jumped in there.
Well, he didn't want Norm. I think the Scandinavian Skoda sunroof to be honest with you. Yes, it was Norwich, the other team. They both had three attempts. And the team that no longer exists is called Swifts. Swifts, their last FA Cup semi-final was in 1886. Ooh. Mark scored 1 point, and a good one, I think. It was a good point. When we return for part four, it's the turn of Charlie Baker. Part four of The Football's On. Ian Stone here with Charlie Baker and Mark Steele. I couldn't do any more of those. Now we've got Charlie, we've got some questions for you. Mm. Okay. Question one. FA Cup semi-finals are prestigious events, but lots of fans don't enjoy the fact they are now always played at Wembley. Mm. As we've said, what year was the first ever FA Cup semi-final played at Wembley Stadium?
Ooh. How old is New Wembley, isn't it? It's New Wembley, so...
No, actually, this was at the old Wembley.
Oh, was it that Arsenal-Tottenham one? Was it that one? And which is 1997?
Oh, I thought you were going to get closer than that. You got everything right except the year. It was 1991.
Oh, it's so close, isn't it?
It was that
one. Yeah.
1991, it was Gazza.
Gazza, that Gazza's one, yeah. Oh, well.
Mm. Yes. As opposed to, I think the one you're thinking about is when Tony Adams scored the winner.
Yes,
actually.
That's the one.
And I was in the Tottenham. I was in the Tottenham end, and there was a man, we'd won tickets from Time Out magazine, and there was a man next to me, I took my missus along, and there was a man next to me who got so angry, and he looked at the Arsenal fans, he went, "Arsenal, you're ugly." And there was a few people who were quite hurt in the Arsenal end, I've got to be honest.
I mean, they weren't the best looking, but you know.
No, but there's no need
for
that.
No need for that, it's just ugly. <isn't it?
laughs> No need.
Speaking of Spurs, they lost on Saturday at home to Brighton. The Seagulls boss, Graham Potter, is not renowned for his playing career, despite having spent a season in the Premier League. Which club did he play for in that season?
Season in the Premier League, Graham Potter.
He played.
And he played? Is it someone who's not in the Premier League anymore? Is it?
Are you asking for clues?
No, I'm not asking for clues.
Okay.
Someone who's not in the Premier League anymore, Norwich. Oh, no, that's next season.
No, it's... It's oh, it's Southampton.
Southampton, there he is.
For Southampton. There he is, a young Potter.
Yeah,
yes.
Lovely.
Okay, 0 out of 2. As well as making it to the Scottish Cup final, Rangers have also made their way into the semi-finals of the Europa League. Mm. If they were to progress, they would be the first Scottish team since 2008 to make a European final. Which team did it in 2008?
Was it Hearts?
No, I love this. It was Rangers.
I was trying to think. Well, it can't be Celtic or Rangers. That'd be too easy.
That was misdirection on our part, wasn't it, really?
My questions feel harder. Graham Potter's career is a hard question.
Even though we talked about it for 10
exactly,
minutes.
Exactly, yeah.
Not half an hour ago in the show. All right, you've got two questions on European football. You're still 1-0 down.
Great.
Question one, Juventus clawed back a point as they scored in the 95th minute against Bologna. In the 84th minute, Bologna had two players sent off in less than a minute. Which former Cardiff Chilean international managed to get two yellows in 10 seconds?
Not a clue.
Any idea?
Robert Earnshaw.
Not a clue. It was Gary Medel. The captain of Bologna.
If I looked at a picture of Gary Medel, I wouldn't be able to tell you. That was his name.
I'd go further than that. If Gary Medel came in and went, do you know what? I've never, ever, ever got over that day that I was sent off after two cards in 10 seconds. And then the question come up a minute later, I'd still not get it.
Not a clue.
Tough question.
Not a clue.
I think we're saying it's there a he tough is. Question. All right. There he is, Gary Medel.
He looks the least like a Gary two. I've ever seen anyone look like a Gary.
I didn't know it was a popular name in Chile, no. I'll be honest with you, but there you go. Question two, or five, in fact.
Yeah.
Karim Benzema continued his scoring form as he scored in the 92nd minute to give Real Madrid a 3-2 win over Sevilla. Mm. How many goals has the 34-year-old Frenchman scored in the league this year? We'll give you one either side.
I'm going to say it's 28 goals.
Oh, again, it's 25.
Ah.
Charlie. Mark. Somehow,
you've won
that 1-0. Yeah.
I can't say it fills me with that much sort of pride.
You actually do prefer losing, don't you? You'd have
been
celebrating.
No, I don't prefer. Yeah. No, I don't know what I do.
That
I don't know what I do
quiz.
Now. What emotion am I supposed to feel?
That was quite a tough quiz. 1-0 to Mr. Mark Steele. Let's do a quick trawl through this week in history. The 22nd of April 1964, we had the scoreline in Scotland that we all like. East 5-4, 4-5.
Oh, lovely.
I think it's actually better the other way around, isn't it? East 5-5, 4-4.
Yeah, so far. Yeah, if you had so far on the end, like it's not the game's not finished. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely the funniest scoreline, isn't it? I would say. It's actually nothing else to say about that.
Brighton won Arsenal 0 was quite funny.
If it was 4-0... Yeah, yes. When it was 4-4, do you think even the East Fife fans were going, go on?
Go on!
Oh, no, because they'd have probably been thinking it better off our way round.
Waving
they?
Them on.
Come on. We'll get mentioned. We'll get mentioned on a Saturday afternoon chat show on one of the sports channels. 21st of April, 1986. Here's a good one. Alvin Martin scored a hat-trick for West Ham against Newcastle, and he scored the goals against three different goalkeepers.
Wow.
Martin Thomas, Chris Hedworth and Peter Beardsley.
He went in goal,
I
did
mean,
he?
I do love... He went in goal. He doesn't,
it doesn't
seem
strike
like the
me
right
as first
going,
choice no. goalkeeper from off
not
the pitch.
Really, no. No. I mean, if you're going to take an outfield player, get a tall one, yeah. I would suggest. But, I mean, you had outfield players going in goal, Mark, at various points at Palace. Have you seen that?
It's a long time since...
Yeah,
that,
it doesn't happen so much now.
Since that happened, no, because you have because you've got a reserve keeper. Yeah, I remember we had no strikers once. So Danny Butterfield, who had been for about 10 years, had been played in defence, had to go up front and scored a hat trick against Wolves in a cup match. Yeah.
Do you think the strikers were a little bit resentful?
Yeah. Oh God, they were fuming.
He walks in.
Well, there's that game when
this
when
is easy.
Who someone brought David James on, didn't they? They have Dave Nugent on
yes.
the bench, and they brought David James on to go up front. Who was that? Was that Portsmouth or
yes? When he was playing for City. No, it was when he was playing for City, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, when he was playing for City, they brought David James on over David Nugent.
Yeah,
go up front.
Yeah, that's dreadful. True.
Yeah, that's a little bit damning. All right, how about this one? 18th of April, 1993. Arsenal beat Sheffield Wednesday in the League Cup final. They won 2-1. Stephen Morrow jumped on Tony Adams and Tony Adams dropped him. And Stephen Morrow broke his collarbone. I was at that Ooh. Game. I remember him jumping up and he sort of fell off Tony Adams. And so while the rest of the team were celebrating, he was being stretchered off. It was a slightly strange end to the game, I would say.
Yeah, and he was injured for
he
ages,
can't be celebrating
wasn't he?
Too much. Yeah, I don't think his career ever really happened after that, to be honest with you.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, that's the dangers of over-celebrating. That's the thing about winning, isn't it, you see?
That's it. I do watch the knee slide. I do watch the knee slides and go, you're going to do your hamstring. You are 100% going to do your hamstring.
And I don't think the groundsman was very happy about it either.
Victor Moses, who was at Palace and then went on, obviously, was a brilliant player. Chelsea, indeed, and in the African nations and all that. But he used to, if he scored, he would do a forward flip thing, you know, somersault. Lethal. It used to terrify me. He'd think, oh, mate, I'd rather you hit the post and it didn't go in if you could break your back.
Yeah, you are thinking about it from the point of view of a middle-aged man, though.
I'm very careful when I do my forward somersaults. Yeah. Really, really take a lot of care.
Okay. That's it for the show. Lovely. Thanks to Charlie Baker and Mark Steele. The big game on BT Sport this weekend is the Arsenal versus Manchester United clash from the Emirates this Saturday morning. Oh my God. We'll be back with more of this next week. Thanks for watching.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.